Well, thank you all for sticking out to the last paper session. I appreciate it. So this is a joint work with Serge Egelman, who's in the audience, Hazim Alamedi, Nia Atri, and Lori Craner. And we studied SSL warnings in browsers. Okay, so I'm sure all of you know this, but when browsers encounter an SSL error, a certificate problem of one of the three types, a domain mismatch, an unknown certificate authority, or an expired certificate, they show a warning. Every browser I know of, there may be some quirky browser out there that doesn't do this, but every browser I know of shows this warning, and users can ignore the warning if they choose. These warnings one of two possibilities for these warnings. They may be the only protection provided to the user against man-in-the-middle and forgery attacks, the final protection against those kinds of attacks, but also, very commonly, they're encountered when connecting to legitimate servers. To give an example that we're going to go over and over again, the Carnegie Mellon Library their certificate is signed by Carnegie Mellon Certificate Authority, so most browsers don't have the Carnegie Mellon Certificate Authority installed, and so they show a warning. Okay, so now we're going to go through the three warning in native browsers that we studied one by one. The first is the Firefox 2 warning. The Firefox 2 warning is a pop-up. So almost all warnings prior to 2007 in major browsers look like this warning. They were pop-up warnings. They didn't take up the entire screen. You saw the site you were trying to connect to in the background. By default, the default user action was unsafe. So if a user clicks OK in this case, the OK button in the bottom, or it even just clicks Enter, the warning is immediately ignored. So this is a funny warning adapted from Jonathan Nightingale at Firefox. I mean, this is essentially what this user says. This warning says to the user. There's a lot of technical crap. I need to click OK to continue. All right. So then the IE7 warning, which is only slightly more difficult for users to get around. It takes up the entire page. There's no pop-up. You can't see the site you're visiting in the background. There is no default action. The user has to make a choice. Do they want to ignore the warning or do they not want to ignore? We call this mandatory choice. But Microsoft makes an explicit recommendation. They recommend that you not continue to the website. Instead, they recommend that you click here to close this web page. However, it's only a one click. You only have to click once. Click the red, the continue to this website once, and you're at the website you're trying to visit. The Firefox 3 warning takes a completely different tact. We sort of call this tact make it difficult. So the warning starts out like this. And it's not even obvious to users what they need to do to get past the warning. There's this small link at the bottom of the page, which you can see there, that says you can add an exception. This link is the only action that the user can take to ignore the warning. If the user clicks that link, the warning expands slightly, and two buttons appear, one that says get me out of here, and the other one that says add exception. In order to continue, they have to click add exception, which brings up a pop-up. They have to click this button that says get certificate, and then they have to confirm a security exception. One thing to note is that in Firefox 3, unlike all other major browsers that I know of, the default, if you've gone through all these steps, is to permanently store the exception. So if the user visits the same, so say they're trying to visit the CME library, if a person goes through these four steps, they will never get this warning again. But it's clear from this that the four steps is significantly more than any of the other browsers. In fact, when Firefox 3 was in one of the first alpha releases, I don't remember, there was 11 steps in order to ignore a certificate warning. So they clearly were trying, at least at the beginning, to make it very difficult for users to get past the warning. Okay, so we, in addition to studying these the three warnings that we just discussed, we also designed two warnings, and we did so. We used a sort of principled approach to design these warnings. The first set of principles we gained from an online survey we did of 400 users. Unfortunately, I don't have time to discuss the details of that survey, but I'm going to just give you the three high level lessons we learned from that survey, and I'll refer you to the paper if you're interested in the details of the survey. So the three major lessons we learned is that in order for warnings to be effective, they need to be context sensitive. They need to try as much as possible to distinguish between cases when people are at a security risk and when they're not at a security risk. When the users don't understand the threat model and they don't understand the difference between a site they should pay attention to these warnings when they're giving up sensitive information and they should not when they're not. In addition, we learned that people are very habituated to these warnings. Many, many users say that they ignore these warnings because they've ignored them in the past and nothing bad happened. And in addition, people confuse the warnings with much less serious warnings. For example, Firefox 2 has a pop-up. When you first install Firefox 2, there's a pop-up that says, when you go to Google and you send a search, the first time the pop-up says, you're sending information unencrypted over the internet. This is a warning that everyone ignores. If you want to use the internet today, you sort of have to ignore that warning. And so people, you know, even confuse they conflate these warnings together. And from the warning science literature, we learn three other lessons. So there's a general literature in the sort of the applied psychology literature about warnings in general, about stop signs, about train track warnings, those kind of things. And there's three high-level lessons that the warning science literature teaches. The first is to avoid warnings whenever possible. If you can just prevent people from doing unsafe things, that's much better than warning. But if you can't, then you need to clearly explain to the user or to the person viewing the warning what the risk is. And just as importantly, if not more importantly, you have to provide a straightforward way of avoiding the risk, instructions to avoid it. I mean, this is a classic example, danger, high voltage. That warning clearly tells people, first of all, that they're going to die if they ignore the warning, and second of all, don't touch. So, all right. So the two warnings we designed are as follows. The first warning, which we call our multi-page warning, is first ask the user a question. The question we ask users is, what type of website are you trying to reach? The reason we ask this question is because we think that users can answer this question. And we also think that depending on how one answers this question, you might want the warning should act differently. Well, some types of websites involve sensitive information, sometimes don't. So in particular, we think that the most commonly attacked institutions are bank and financial institutions and e-commerce sites. So we think in those cases, those sites also never have self-signed certificates or the like. And so we think in those cases, the warning should be more severe than in sort of more trivial cases. And the second warning is based off of the Firefox 3 phishing warning. It uses the sort of more severe, has a more severe look. It has a black background and a red and a red background around the warning, and it uses the red Larry, which is the most severe Larry icon, and it clearly explains to users what the risk is. It says, even the headline, high risk of security compromise. The two actions that are most obvious to the user are the two buttons at the bottom. One that says "Get me out of here," which, clearly states that there's a risk, and probably the thing we recommend is to get out of here. And the other one is, why is the site blocked? Neither of which ignore the warning. Only if the user clicks on the small link in the bottom right corner, can they ignore the warning. In addition, we also give explicit advice of what they should do. It says, we advise you to contact this company by telephone or using a different computer that does not yield this warning. Okay, so just to be clear about how the multi-page warning works, if the user selects bank or other financial institution or online store, then the warning proceeds to the red scary warning, the single page warning, and if they answer other, then they immediately go on to the destination website. So our study involved 100 participants, all of whom were CMU students, and they were divided evenly between the five warnings I discussed, the Firefox 2 warning, the Firefox 3 warning, the IE7 warning, our multi-page warning, and the single-page warning. They were recruited, all these CMU students were recruited by flyers and emails and participant lists on campus, and we paid them a small amount for their participation, and all of them ended up being CMU students. The warning was shown twice during the task of the, in particular, users were given four tasks. The first task was to find the total area of Italy using Google. The second task was to find the account balance, their personal account balance using their bank. Everyone was a member of the same bank, and they had to go log on to that bank and find their account balance. Of course, the warning appeared. We engineered that bank website so it would, the warning would appear, and so they would have to ignore the warning if they want to continue using the bank website. The third task is to find the price of Freakonomics on Amazon, and the final task was to use the CMU library, online library catalog. As I said, the CMU online library catalog uses a Carnegie Mellon certificate, so by default, browsers by default will show a warning when you visit the CMU library. Another thing to note is that the bank involves sensitive information, while the library doesn't. All the user needed to do to use the CMU library catalog was to type the word Richestan into the search bar. There was nothing sensitive about what they were doing. By contrast, in the bank case, they had to enter their bank credentials, and their bank account information. Their bank balance and the like could have also been stolen. In addition, this is actually another important point. We provided an alternative task in each of these four tasks. For example, in the first case, if they didn't want to find the total area of Italy using Google, they could find it using ask.com. And for the bank case and the CMU library case, we provided phone numbers for the automated phone system of the library and the automated phone system of the bank that had the credentials they needed in order to use those phone systems. This is important because participants in studies often feel like they are failing. They want to succeed in the study. They want to do the tasks that they've been asked to do. And they need an outlet to do those tasks that doesn't involve them doing this unsafe action in order to sort of replicate their natural state at home. The reason we have this Google and Amazon task is for similar reasons. We advertised the study as a usability information study. We didn't want to prime users to think about security because when users are at home, they don't think about security. So they're thinking about doing their tasks. So we wanted them to be in the same mindset when they were doing the study. And finally, we provided a post-experiment survey about why they did what they did. Okay, so I'm going to step through one of these tasks, one of the four tasks that we discussed. In particular, I'm going to step through the task based on a user that will see the single page warning, and this should illustrate all of the other tasks. So we handed each user an instruction sheet, what to do in this task. In this case, the task is to write down the last two digits of your account balance. By going to www.bank.com. Obviously, they went to the real bank website, not bank.com. And they were given an alternative to call the 1-888-555-1212, which that's actually not the bank number, but you get the idea, the automated phone system of the bank, if they didn't want it. And they were told to think aloud as they were completing each task. So they would go to their empty browser, they would type in bank.com, and they would immediately get the warning. Right, so this warning, there's two alternatives for what they would do. They might click ignore this warning, in which case they would go to their bank website, they would log in, and their credentials, potentially would be stolen. Of course, during the study, they weren't. An alternative is that they could have clicked get me out of here, been all worried, and called the bank on the phone. So in either case, they would have succeeded at the task. They could write down their phone, the two digits of their account balance. Okay, so our hypothesis were in advance of the study were that the IE7 and Firefox 2 warnings would be as good as useless, in the sense that almost all users at the bank and the library would ignore the warning. We expected that the Firefox 3 warning, which makes makes it difficult for users to get past, and the single page warning would users at the bank and the library would ignore the warning at a lower rate than in IE7 and Firefox 2 cases. And finally, with our multi-page warning, users would ignore the warning or proceed past the warning at the library more likely and pay heed the warning at the bank. Well, this is the first set of results. So at the bank, as we expected, the Firefox 2 case and IE7 case, 90%, almost all of the users ignore the warning. Even in the best case, our single page warning, 45% of the users still ignore the warning. So this is a dramatic illustration that even in the best case of warning, and a warning that's very well designed, at least in our opinion, principally designed, very large numbers of users are not going to pay attention. So in this risky situation, the Firefox 2 and IE7 warnings were statistically significantly worse than the Firefox 3 single page and multi page warnings. At the library, we also had a mostly expected result. The Firefox 2 and IE7 warnings were almost everyone ignored them, just as in the bank case. Also in the Firefox 3 case, at pretty much the same rate, people ignored the Firefox 3 warning in the bank, at the bank and the library. In the single page warning, on the other hand, people were at the library, more people continued than they did at the bank. So in this low-risk situation, pretty much users overrode almost all of the warnings except the Firefox 3 warning. So the Firefox 3 warning was, well, it depends on your perspective. people avoided the risk of self-signed certificates, or they were doing a legitimate task, connecting to a legitimate server, and 40% of them didn't continue. So now, comparing the library to the bank, as you can see, in all five warning cases, there were more people that continued at the library than the bank. But in all of the native conditions, the results are very, very small. So basically, either one or two users in each of the native warning conditions, the Firefox 3, Firefox 2, Firefox 3, and IE7 warning conditions, did something different at the bank than at the library, which sort of indicates that people have a backward understanding of what these warnings are about. They don't realize that the bank, whether sending sensitive information is something that that's when they should pay attention to the warning. And instead, they think that this website, the bank, is trusted, so therefore we can ignore this warning. The single page and multi page warnings, however, both of them, there were significantly fewer people that continued to the bank than the library. So this is a little bit different than we expected in the hypothesis. The single page warning, as you remember in the hypothesis, we expected, since it's not context sensitive, that the single page warning at the library and the bank people would continue at roughly the same rate as they did in the native warning. That turned out not to be the case. Continue along. So this, we think that the next two slides will explain why that happened. So we think that the single page warning effectively explained the risk to users. We asked them in the exit survey, why did you choose to heed or ignore the warning? And in the Firefox 2, Firefox 3, and IE7 cases, only two of the 20 users, so 10% of the users, mentioned risk. However, in the single page warning case, 11 of the 20 users, this is a very substantial difference, explicitly mentioned risk as the reason why they weren't continuing. So if you remember back to the warning science literature guidance, explaining the risk was one of the major pieces of guidance. The second piece of guidance was that you should explain what action to take. So we asked that question also. What action do you think the warning wanted you to take? And so again, at a much lower rate, at the Firefox 2, Firefox 3, and IE7 warnings, 2, 3, and 4 of users, they mentioned that the warning wanted them not to proceed. While at a higher rate of the single page warning, half of the users mentioned it at the single page warning. So this indicates that the single page warning was at least comparably much more effective at educating users about the risk involved in continuing. So the second question is, why is the Firefox 3 warning effective? We expected that it was making it difficult, but there was actually an unexpected result. So four of the users in our study confused the warning with this warning, that they thought that the site was down. Actually, one guy, he accused me he said to me, you sneaky bastard, you blocked the site. So so four of the users of the 5XD warning didn't even think there was anything to do. They didn't notice the or you can add exception link, that there was anything that they could do to get past the warning. They just thought the site was down. So this is an interesting result, and we don't think it would continue as people get used to the 5X3 warning. If they've seen this many times, they'll learn eventually that you can get past it by clicking the link. In addition, there's a lot more. We measured what we called hesitation actions, and there was a lot more hesitation at the 5X3 warning than there was in any of the other warnings. Right. What we call hesitation actions were refreshing the browser, clicking the bat button, retyping the URL, those kind of things. And there was almost 10 times as much of these hesitation actions at the Firefox 3 warning than there were in any of the other warning cases. All right. Finally, to evaluate the multi-page warning, the question, we actually think that the multi-page warning, as it stands right now, was not completely effective. In particular, 5 of the 20 participants knowingly answered the question incorrectly. Three users knowingly answered gave the wrong answer. They said other when they meant bank. So basically, they had learned that the way to get past the warning was to give the incorrect answer. So they clicked the back button and clicked other to get past the warning. So we think that the users could distinguish between a bank and not a bank. We don't think that they didn't know that they were visiting a bank. Instead, we think that they were just gaming their warning like every other warning. On the other hand, two users confused the warning with the server unavailable error, the website was blocked, as with the Firefox 3 warning. We borrowed the design from the Firefox 3 warning, so this is not particularly surprising. And so, as I said, only 15 of the 20 participants answered the question correctly, which was much less than we expected. But another weakness, which was brought to our attention by an anonymous reviewer, is that this kind of warning is susceptible to finer-grained origins attacks. And I'm going to refer you to the paper for the details of that attack. Basically, it involves attackers attacking sites that are different than the site that the user types in the URL or clicks on in a link. So we think that a context-sensitive approach is still needed, but we don't think this is the right context-sensitive approach. And we think that there are others in the literature, which we'll talk about in a second, which could provide a better answer. So in conclusion, we evaluate a wide class of warnings in embodying what we think are pretty solid strategies. So our customs warning conveyed risk and allowed users to take risk into account when they were making decisions. But they were still not good enough. As I said, 45% of users still connected to the bank, and if there had been a man in the middle, their bank credentials would have been stolen. So we think that a system that really blocks users, when we have a good understanding of that the attack is very likely, we think that a blocking is the only effective solution, that warnings are not enough. And we think that there are two systems, Perspectives and Forte HTTPS, which under certain conditions could block users completely, because the false positive rate is very, very low. However, we think that even if we adopted these two systems, there are cases where warnings are still needed, and we think that the solution we provided, in particular the single page warning, could be used in those cases. So I'm finished now, so I'm happy to take questions.
Well, let's start off and thank the speaker. The back microphone.
Okay,
there we go.
Konstantin Beznosov, UBC. So, about your participants, you mentioned 100 participants. Were they all CMU students?
Yes.
What was their background?
So the
which programs did they study?
So this is we have a much more technical audience than the average audience. Obviously we're at Carnegie Mellon, so it's a technical university. So that just by default we had more people. But even within Carnegie Mellon, we had a much more technical audience than the average audience. A very large portion of our population was master's students in technical master's programs, Information Networking Institute, Software Engineering.
Okay. So the follow-up question then: how generalizable the results of your study are?
So within the subjects we studied, we saw no discernible differences between the technical students and the non-technical students. We've seen similar results in other studies that the lab has done. We don't know for sure, of course. You can never know for sure. But we've seen no evidence that the technical sophistication of the participants matters all that much. On the other hand, I suspect that if we did the study on this audience, we would get a different result than the audience we did. But this audience is a very, very rare audience. And we think that the audience we did have is what we think is relatively representative. We have, of course, cannot generalize to older people, so people from different countries, those kind of things.
You said representative of what? General population or representative of CMU population?
So I think that the it's representative of the general population. At least the results, the differences between the different warnings. But we can't know for sure. But that's my guess.
So do you use technical expertise as an independent variable?
Sorry?
Did you use technical expertise as an independent variable?
We didn't group people by technical sophistication into the groups. We did it randomly. Is that the question you're asking?
Well, did you check this condition?
Oh, yes, we did. As I said earlier, we did check that, and we saw that the technical sophistication didn't matter within the group we did study.
Thanks.
So the English majors, for example, weren't more or less likely to ignore warnings.
Can you go back to the slide with the graphs and the comparisons for a sec?
Which one?
So that one.
This one. Okay.
I was having trouble interpreting this slide because there are no error bars on this graph. Can you comment on whether these differences in the right two columns are statistically significant?
So you're saying the single page and the multi-page warning?
Yeah, there are no error bars, so I can't.
Right.
Tell
so they are statistically significant. That's what I did. I thought I had mentioned that, but yes, they are statistically significant. Those two results are the only statistically significant differences between the single page and the multi-page warning.
Thank you.
Paul Van Orschot. One of your suggestions is that perhaps a better solution would be to block the bad websites. So could you give a few more comments on, does this mean we should just throw out all the self-signed search? Or what do we do with that? Because it's actually a bit tricky to figure out what to do there.
Right. So I think in an ideal world, yes, we would throw out all the self-signed certificates. I think it's probably prohibitively expensive. And I mean, you could talk to the IE people that are here, and you could ask them if they think that's a good idea. I'm guessing they'll say no. I think that the solutions that I mentioned, the perspectives and force HTTPS, which use a more sophisticated answer, basically by comparing what users see to what some notary servers see, they can pretty effectively distinguish between attacks and non-attacks. And I think that's probably a more promising avenue given the based on the cost than blocking self-assigned certificates altogether.
Back to.
Okay. Peter Kralchik, I have a question regarding...
We're actually going to take the question from the back first, or Atul.
Okay. Hi, Atul Prakash, University of Michigan. So in this case, did the users actually were attempting to go to their own bank?
Yes.
Or was this a simulated bank?
No, it was their own bank with their own credentials.
Okay, so you asked people...
actual sensitive information that they were releasing.
Okay, so in this case, you could have captured 45% of actual credentials.
Yes.
Okay.
The question I had is, did you make any, because you gave them a task, find the amount in your checking account. Did you try to do some statistics where you kind of said, well, try to protect yourself? I mean, in other words, you gave them a task to find the amount of money in their checking account, which
right.
sort of led them to the fact, well, if I, quote, didn't do what I'm supposed to, I mean, a portion of the people who didn't continue, who stopped, or essentially continued to go forward, and you know, bypass the warnings. Basically, they were under the impression that to succeed was to get the dollar amount in their checking account.
So that's what I was trying. As I mentioned earlier, we provide an alternative task. So users that wanted to succeed in the task, actually all the users that didn't continue to the bank website, they called the bank on the phone and they used the automated phone system and checked their balance. So the users that ignored the warning and users that didn't ignore the warning, both of them succeeded at the task.
One last question.
Charles Antonelli, University of Michigan. So one of the issues with all of these pop-up warnings with users I've discovered over time is that there's a fear of clicking a button whose action is not known beforehand, particularly if by clicking a button you end up doing something that you have no control over, like installing a certificate or something like that. And so have you looked at the possibility of alerting the users to the fact that with some standard way, like the three dots in the Apple Macintosh UI standard, you're indicating that by clicking this button, you'll go to a page where all will be explained and you'll have a chance to decide what to do. I'm not going to do anything without telling you.
So your point is if you wanted more information before proceeding?
You want to have control over like what happens, and you want to have assurance that when you click that button that you're not going to do something that I don't know about.
So this kind of thing would happen on a help button or something like that, though, right? Because you wouldn't, if ignore this warning is going to take you to the page, so you've already done something.
Yeah, but if you have a button which says I'm add an exception, right?
Yeah.
You know, if I'm a regular user, I don't know if by clicking that button you're going to add the exception, and then I have no control over it. It's done.
Right.
Or whether I'm going to a page where I get to decide if I want to make an exception or not based on more information, you see. And if there's a standard way of doing that, I think that would help.
Okay, yeah. So we certainly haven't investigated that yet. I'd be interested in hearing more about this because I'm not sure I fully understand, but I guess we should take that offline.
Talk about it, yeah.
All right, let's thank the speaker one more time.